Welcome to another edition of Garden Talk. Hi, Larry Mueller here, and today we are beginning the show by, and probably going through the show, by talking about the Dane County Farmers Market. They have a new cookbook out, and it is a dandy. And our guest is Henry Morin. Henry's president of the board of the Dane County Farmers Market. He's also a vendor. So he's got an orchard. They do a lot of different fruits in the, out of that orchard, and they sell vegetables as well. So he can answer those kinds of questions as well. His business is more an orchard and nursery. So as we begin, I hope you'll join in. What would you like to know about the farmer's market? Do you have a good experience to share? Maybe you sell at the farmer's market? Why do you like attending them? Give us a call. The number is 800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. Henry Morin, welcome. Thanks for taking time to be with us.
Well, it's great to be here. Thanks for having me.
How long have you been a vendor at the Dane County Farmers Market?
Well, short answer, I guess it's 20 years, but it's really hard to say that because it doesn't really feel like it's been that long, but it has.
About 20 years.
If you look at it's hard to dispute the facts as they are on paper, but it doesn't feel like it's been that long.
You know, I know there's wait lists and so forth even to get in there. Did you have to go on a wait list?
Yeah, you did.
How long did you have to wait?
Well, it was supposed, when I first signed up, it was supposed to be 3 years, but then it actually ended up only being two. And I got into a little trouble for it because at that time I was the manager of the Beloit Farmers Market, and that's where we started. And I had to kind of finish things up there. But you are required to vend in order to retain your membership. And
But you did, and there you're still here 20 years later.
It all came together.
Well, the market started, and I'm old enough to remember the start of the farmer's market. Actually, it was 50 years ago.
Well,
50
and
years
now,
last year, wasn't it?
Yeah, so now it's actually 51 and counting because it was 20 or 72, so yeah.
It was, maybe you can give us, and I should mention your cookbook right off the bat, which is the Dane County Farmer's Market Cookbook, subtitled Local Foods and Global Flavors, and it is really a dandy, full of great recipes and some colorful photos to go along with it, which I always enjoy. But in the beginning, and it was put together by Therese Allen, who I've talked with Therese on the phone show in the past, been a long time now. But she starts with a little history, and you're well acquainted with the history, how to get started, and so forth.
Well, the cookbook or the market itself?
Well, let's talk about the market itself, and then we'll swing into the cookbook.
Yeah. Well, she has a really wonderful history at the end of the book. It was started to be thought about in the early 70s, 70, 71. Mayor Bill Dyke, and some other area growers, I believe, had the initial idea and really started to push for it. And it came together on, I believe the date was Saturday, September 30, 1972 was the first market. And there were just a handful of growers. But even at that, even with just a handful of growers, it was enormously successful. And it just sort of, you know, ballooned very quickly and became a very popular event for people to, you know, to come to.
It is an amazing event. You know, for those who haven't been to that market, describe what's going on.
It really is. I mean, I can't tell you the number of times people, you know, there's a lot of tourists who come, a lot of regulars, but there are a lot of tourists. And I can't tell you the number of times people will come up to your stand and say, you know, what's going on today? Is there something, you know, unusual? And it's like this every Saturday. And it kind of, if you don't, if you're not familiar with it, it kind of blows your mind every Saturday, you know, and it's happening.
And you know? What a setting, because you've got the square with the Capitol, yeah. And all the way around the square,
yeah,
are vendors.
I know it sounds simple, but it's a really wonderful place. Every single week, even on day, the market always surprises you. Even on days when it's rainy or seems like it's going to be terrible. Yeah, I mean, there's better days and worse days, but even on days when it's rainy, people yeah. come out and they expect you to be there.
the kind of interesting thing for me too is that it's not just tomatoes and onions. It's a broad range of everything practically imaginable. Flowers.
Yeah. Yeah, there's
meats.
any kind of Wisconsin agricultural product, I believe, at some time you can find at the market. And Therese has put together a really extensive and comprehensive list at the back of the book of all of the different products that you can find at the market. And there's a lot.
And we should talk about the rest of the book, because that ending is a nice history, but there's also a nice forward that gives us a little color there.
Well, first of all, thanks to Tory Miller, who wrote a preface or a foreword, and he's a great customer, been a great advocate for the market.
And one of the great chefs.
And one of the great chefs of the city. Therese has, Therese's is, it wouldn't have happened without Therese, but it also wouldn't have happened without Joan and Ted Ballweg of Savory Accents Farm. It was, I think, really their idea, and Therese has a wonderfully evocative picture of that, of how the book came to be in the book. They approached her, asking her if she was interested in writing a cookbook for the 50th anniversary. And she, as she says, she immediately said yes. It was something that she's been really wanting to do for a long time. And this was the perfect opportunity. And so, Joan and Ted Ballweg, and then not only did they come up with the idea, but they've put in so much time making it happen. So great credit to Joan and Ted Ballweg.
How did they select the recipes?
Well, I believe at the beginning of the market year 22, they put out a request to vendors and also friends of the market, I think, in general, to submit submit recipes. And so people did. And then Therese and a cohort of testers tried them out and came up with, I think, slight improvements, especially in the case of our two submissions, came up with a few improvements on the recipes and tried them out. I guess that's how, they just...
It is, as I said, a beautifully written. How many recipes are in here?
I don't know offhand, but...
I know there's at least 125, because I was counting through. Yeah. I think that's about right. And you have a couple, at least one. You got a couple.
We have
in
a
there.
Couple.
Concord both, Grape Pie, I think, is one.
Yeah. Yeah. Both desserts. My favorite part of the meal. Concord Grape, we grow Concord grapes, and people always will, first of all, about Concords, people always say, my grandmother or grandparents had a few Concord grapes in their backyard. frequently they were actually not always Concords. They were something similar, but so people always asked about it, and then also people would point out, oh, you know, they would. My grandmother would make a Concord grape pie, and I don't know. So my wife and I were kind of curious about it, and we found on this little fisherman's museum on Washington Island this cookbook from the 1950s in the museum that had a Concord grape pie. And so we tried it out and thought, yeah, I mean,
pretty it's good.
Pretty darn good. And it's the pie as printed in that 1950s cookbook and Teresa's improvement on it are a little different, but she explains in the book what that difference is. But it's an important difference, I think.
Well, it's, you know, and I, you know, I grew up on a farm and we did not have grapes. And so I guess we never had a grape pie. So when saw that, I thought, man, why not?
Well, it's for whatever reason, it's kind of fallen out of favor. And I think only because you don't really, you know, if you know, everyone's heard of Concord grapes, but you go into a grocery store and you don't find Concord grapes. But they're, you know, widely grown in any kind of grape growing area. In southern Michigan, for instance, they're still, you know, all of your Welch's grape juice, any of your grape juice is made from mostly Concord grapes. And on the farm that I grew up on, my grandmother had a couple of rows, but there was a area of the farm that didn't have grapes on it anymore. It had sweet corn, but we still called it the grapes because my grandfather had planted, probably 5-6 acres of Concords up there. And it was a nice high spot, kind of sandy soil. So it just was, you know,
perfect.
much later, it was just called the grapes.
And we posted that up on our, I go to ideas at WPR.org/Larry and that recipe's up there.
Oh.
Jill just told me that she just posted it. So
okay.
I think it'd be fun to try. And you sell grapes at the market.
Yeah. Yeah.
At
so
the farmer.
We do grow grape Concords and some earlier ones that are very similar. We sell them at the market.
Henry Morin, our guest today, he's president of the board of the Dane County Farmers Market. He's also a vendor at the Farmers Market. His business is Morin Orchard and Nursery, and we're talking about the Dane County Farmers Market cookbook, but we're taking other questions as well. Love to hear your experiences at the Farmers Market. What do you think is fun, and what do you think is unusual, and what do you like, or maybe is there something you don't like about the market? We can hear that, too. And you might also have questions. Obviously, Henry's got extensive experience with orchards. And if you have that kind of question as an orchardist, or maybe you've got your own apple tree and you wonder about our grapes, I hope you'll join in. We have plums, too. I'm pretty much anything in the fruit area he's going to know about. You can join in. The number to call is 800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234. You can email us, the email address, ideas@WPR.org. Jill Nadeau's our producer today, Trina LaSousa, our engineer. I'm Larry Mueller for Garden Talk on the Ideas Network. Thanks for joining us for this edition of Garden Talk on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here with my guest, Henry Morin, president of the board of the Dane County Farmers Market. He's a vendor. His business is Morin Orchard and Nursery. Questions for him, give a call at 800-642-1234. Email to ideas@WPR.org. And Henry, before we get any further, and we'll do this again, but maybe we should tell people how to get copies of the Dane County Farmers Market cookbook.
Yeah, sure. First, it's widely available at bookstores around the state, I think on the Dane County Farmers Market website, it has a list of those bookstores.
Go to your local bookstore.
Go to your local bookstore. They probably will have it, and if they don't, feel free to ask them if they would be interested in carrying it. It's something that it wouldn't be hard at all for them to get it from Little Creek Press, who is the publisher of the book.
And probably right from the Dane County Farmers Market website as well. You could probably
order. You can get it from the website, and probably most importantly, at the farmers market itself. We sell them at the market at the at the holiday markets at Monona Terrace. The book will be available, basically throughout the whole market season and into next year, we'll have the book. So,
well, callers, let's callers online. Let's go to Joy in West Bend first here. Joy, hi. Thanks for calling.
Hi. Thanks. I just wanted to mention that the recipe for grape pie must be wonderful. We live on a little 3-acre farmette and have grapes, Concord grapes, and I make a grape pie once a year. It's so rich and so good. You know, I don't want our family to be eating that so much.
Let them have it.
But you had a question about sticky buns, did you not, Joy?
Yeah. We had my sister-in-law served some sticky buns that she had gotten from Madison. And I've never been to the market there, but I was wondering, is there a bakery that they come from, or is it a certain person? Would there be any other way that I could get those sticky buns a different time than when the farmer's market is open?
Sure.
Do you know, forgive me, but do you know who bakes those?
She's looking for.
No, that's what I'm asking. If you know, it was like a cinnamon bun with, you know, lots of stickiness and pecan.
Okay, it may be Renaissance Farm, and I guess, yeah, if that's the case, I know he sells cinnamon rolls, but you're saying it's not a cinnamon roll; it's a sticky bun. Yeah, I don't know offhand. I would say try to find is it a recipe in the cookbook that you're referring to?
No, I think she's just wondering how she can order some of those sticky buns from and have them delivered, because they are really good. And I can't remember, it might be Renaissance Farms, but yeah. It could be another vendor. I think there are a couple that sell them.
I would say if all else, if you email the market manager of the Dane County Farmers Market, she'll know which vendor sells those, and she would get right back to you. So yeah, I would email Jamie Bugel, the market manager, and she would be able to help you out.
And you could probably find that email address if you just go to Dane County Farmers Market, type that in. The website will have that, you know, contact information.
Yeah.
And Joy, go ahead and order that. I know what you mean. Every time I go to the market, the one of the longer lines is always in front of the sticky bun place, and I never pay any. I don't pay close enough attention to the, in that case at least, to who's making them. So. And somebody else is probably going to call and say, "Why, Mueller, why don't you remember, you know?" And they'll have the name for us. So keep listening, Joy, for sure. Andrew and Aaron, Wisconsin, had a question about apple trees. So, Andrew, you can call back if we lost Andrew. So let's go to Frank in DeForest next. Hi, Frank.
Hey, Larry, how you doing?
Good. Appreciate the call. What's on your mind?
So I just have a cute story I want to share with you guys from last summer. My special person in my life, Jane, was in town, and my daughter and my 13-year-old granddaughter, and we went down to the market on Father's Day weekend and had just a wonderful time. And by the time we got to the west side of the square, we were kind of looking at some stuff in one of the stands, and big crowd there, you know, and we started hearing some cheering, and we looked up, and I thought it was a parade coming by, and lo and behold, we were surprised by the annual Naked Bike Riders.
Yeah, that happens down there too.
It's a once a year thing.
It's a once a year thing, but it yeah, you can find most anything down there.
Yeah, that's and then you got the kids, and it's it was an interesting time. Frank, thanks a lot for calling in. Appreciate it. Oh boy, Pat in Madison, we'll go to you. Hi, Pat.
Hi. Hi, I'm from the north side of Madison, and I've always enjoyed the farmer's market. I go early to beat the crowds, but I've always enjoyed it. But I'm a part of a local community garden that has apple trees and throughout at different parts of the garden space, and they haven't been treated, so we always have a huge amount of fauna with our apples in the fall with worms and such. And I wondered, is there an organic treatment that we can use in our apple trees that would help us reduce the number of worm larvae in the apples?
Yeah, there are. And I mean, there's quite an array of things, but I would say, you know, well, so there's quite an array of different diseases and insects that, you know, as I'm sure you know, will have their effects on apples. But if you're talking about primarily, you know, the worms, there's really two kinds of larvae that are two main kinds. One is codling moth, which comes sort of early in the season. And then the other is apple maggot larvae, which come later in the summer. The codling moth enters through the ends of the apple, and then the apple maggot will lay its egg on the sort of just on the side, on the surface of the apple. So probably the easiest way to deal with codling moth, you can get from horticulture supply store, online stores, probably the easiest. You can get a mating disruption, so it sends out pheromones which disrupt the mating of the codling moth, and basically you just hang that mating disruptor in the tree, and that can help quite a bit. And then for apple maggot, they are attracted to red fruity smelling objects, so you can get these sort of red balls that are coated with a sticky stuff, and you just hang some of those. You'd basically hang one in each tree if you just have a handful of trees, and that can attract those apple maggot before they get to the fruit. And those are quite effective if you don't have a whole big orchard to have to deal with that problem.
Yeah.
So I guess I would say those two things to start.
So codling moths, you said early. What do you mean by early?
Oh,
what?
Like late May, June, early June. There's a very specific method for determining when they hatch. You count degree days. You probably don't have to deal with all that, but if you just hung those pheromone mating disruptors out in, say late May, very late May, early June,
that in would Madison be, for sure.
Yeah.
And then for the codling moths, when would you?
That would be for the codling
moth.
That
would be for the
codling
moth.
And the apple maggot, probably just sometime, I'd say like late July, something like that. Or early, mid-July. Yeah, mid-July, have them out there.
Okay, Pat, does that help?
Yeah, one more little question. I'd always heard farmer's tale about the apple larvae actually being, the eggs being put hatched or laid in at the budding of the fruit. And that's a myth?
Well, that's a different I'm not an entomologist, but that could be a different pest. So there's a variety of leaf rollers, and that may be what people are seeing when the apple is in flower. There's a few different types of leaf rollers, and they look just like little green worms, and that's what those are.
And they're not going to be eating the apples, are they? They're going to be
Do their own type of damage. They can ruin the flower, and so then make it infertile. And they can do their damage on the leaf itself. If they're not controlled in some way, they'll have an effect. Not as serious. And there are some organic, very simple organic sprays for leaf rollers, but usually I would say the natural predators in a home orchard, I would say a lot of times the natural predators more or less
take care of the
leaf rollers. But yeah.
Pat, there you go. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. What about you? Question as we talk orchards or comments about the Dane County Farmers Market? What about the cookbook? Have you tried it yet? The Dane County Farmers Market cookbook, local foods and global flavors. Give us a call. The number's 800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234. Or you could email us, the email address, ideas@wpr.org, ideas@wpr.org. Love to hear from you. Tell us a little bit more about your own orchard, Henry.
Yeah. Well, it's not a large orchard by any means. It's about 10 acres. Very different from, I guess, the one that I grew up on in western Michigan. But it's a nice size for the scale at which we do our work, which is selling primarily at the farmers markets. And we mostly grow, or I guess we have an emphasis on apples, but we also grow pears, plums, peaches. Peaches aren't really that reliable in our part of the in Wisconsin, but there are a handful of varieties that are pretty reliable, and they're really wonderful when you get them. I've tried cherries. I'm going to be planting some more sour cherries this next spring, so hopefully we'll have more. Some of those in about 5-6 years. but mostly apples.
Mostly apples. And actually, Marty had emailed to ask for a recommendation for easy to grow apple varieties. So let's.
That would generally refer to an apple variety that is scab resistant. That's really your main fungal disease, and in my experience, the Liberty variety is basically scab immune, and it goes a long way to having like nice decent apples from year to year. It's a nice, reliable, productive apple, a really versatile variety. It's great fresh eating. It's also good in baking. Just a really good all-around variety.
Tastes good, too.
And it tastes good. Yep.
Somebody's going to say, wait a minute, what was that variety again?
Liberty is the one I'm talking about. And there have been more, there's Apple breeders have been coming out with more varieties that are resistant to scab, apple scab. Gold Rush is a really great one. It's a very late ripening apple, but it keeps throughout the entire winter, and you'll bite into it in April, and it'll be just a little bit soft. And this is just in regular cold storage, just a little bit soft on the outer edge of the apple, but it'll taste just perfectly crisp once you get bite into it. And that's a really wonderful baking apple too.
You mentioned peaches, and Tori emailed to ask, which peach varieties have you been able to actually grow in southern Wisconsin? Yeah.
Well, probably the most reliable is Reliance. And I don't really have that much experience with that variety, but the one that I've found to be the most reliable is Contender. And I have three varieties. And year in and year out, Contender will come through a winter and there'll be virtually nothing on the other two varieties. The other two being Gloria and Flamin' Fury number 13. The Flamin' Fury series is a popular one in Michigan, and there's a whole different number, a different number for each season. The one that is supposed to be more, there's a couple that are more cold hardy, and that's Flamin' Fury number 13 and Flamin' Fury 24C cold hardy. But both of those don't have, I've had more good luck with Contender. So, and then there's another one, Madison, that's supposed to be quite cold hardy. I have not grown it, but it's supposed to be quite cold hardy. And then also, one that I have had some experience with, Rising Star there's Blazing Star, Blushing Star, Rising Star. Rising Star has been pretty good with cold hardiness.
And they're changing the zones now.
And that, yeah.
Climate change.
But they do that, but then you still get a 30 below. So what happens with peaches, the wood, many people don't really understand what peaches can and can't take. So the wood can survive, but the fruit buds can only take, about minus 13, minus 15, except for these handful of varieties that can take a little bit more cold. The big mistake people make frequently is that if they'll plant a peach tree in what seems to be a warm spot, but that's kind of the worst thing you could do because they can't withstand any real fluctuation. So as soon as you get a warm day, the sap starts rising, and then it gets cold, and it freezes in the bark of the tree, and it splits the tree, and then you get bacterial canker in that site, and it does its thing.
Henry Morin, our guest today, president of the board of the Dane County Farmers Market. He's a vendor. His business is Morin Orchard and Nursery. Questions for him, or maybe experiences to share relating to the Dane County Farmers Market, or maybe the book as well. You may have already purchased it and tried it out. I hope you'll join in. The number to call is 800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or you could email us, and the email address, ideas@wpr.org, ideas@wpr.org. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. You're listening to Garden Talk on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here with my guest, Henry Morin, who is president of the board of the Dane County Farmers Market. He's a vendor. His business is Morin Orchard and Nursery. And so we're talking about the Dane County Farmers Market cookbook, Local Foods, Global Flavors. Therese Allen put it together with a lot of help, as we've been talking about today. So if you have questions about the market itself, maybe you have some fruit-related questions, probably even some vegetables he could talk about as well, you can join in. The number to call, 800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or you could email us to ideas@wpr.org. You know, I didn't mention the Dane County Farmers Market Cookbook is the title. The subtitle is Local Foods, Global Flavor. And the ingredients in these recipes, pretty much you're going to get them.
You can get them at the market for sure. And I guess, yeah, like the market itself, you know, every Saturday, people from all walks of life are on the square. And similarly, the book, I think, reflects that, the global flavors, I should say, reflects that just diversity of background that the people of Wisconsin bring to the market and to the state. And something I think that comes up every once in a while, because it's the Dane County Farmers Market, people sometimes have the misperception, I guess, that the farmers that attend the vendors are primarily from Dane County, but that's not really the case. We have vendors from a huge area around the state, and so, yeah, not only do you have people, the vendors coming from all over, but the people who attend come from all over. And so that diversity really is highlighted in the book. But the ingredients are all there, and they're all local. Another thing that people don't frequently understand is that everything that is at the market has to have been, well, I should say almost everything. Some things that, like some flowers and so on, that are more difficult to grow in Wisconsin are in the ingredients in some of the products at the market, but any of the raw ingredients are grown by the person at the stand from Wisconsin.
There we go. I'm going to put in a shameless plug. As long as we've been talking a bit about recipes, I posted a new blog on ideas at wpr.org/Larry. And I've got a number of recipes. You might want to go to our blog site, but the latest is for a venison scallopini. I've got another one in there earlier that I put in for venison stroganoff, and other recipes as well. And so go to ideas@wpr.org/Larry and look at the blog section, and there you're going to find those recipes. And speaking again, I think it's worth mentioning how we get a copy of the Dane County Farmers Market Cookbook.
Yeah, sure. First of all, I think at the market itself, at Monona Terrace, through the end of the year, and then the market goes to the Garver Feed Mill in January, and you can certainly find the market or the cookbook at those farmers markets, and then bookstores in Madison, but also around the state, and again that. Those bookstores, I believe, are listed in the Dane County Farmers Market website. And then you can also order the book from the Dane County Farmers Market website itself. So
there
many,
you go.
Many different ways to get the book.
Many ways. Al in Burlington, we'll go to you. Hi, Al.
Hey, Yeah, hey, hi. I'm getting hungry listening to you guys. two questions. One, what do you use? What would be the homeowner best bet for pest treatment for the peach trees that are successful you discussed? And the second thing is when you talked about codling moth and apples scab maggot, what additional things like would a dormant spray help early? And then what is another spray from, I can't remember it, that works on fungi? So I'll just hang up and listen, and thank you.
All right.
Okay. Well, so there's peaches don't seem in a home orchard, peaches, if they make it through the winter, okay, they don't seem to be quite as vulnerable to insect pests as apples. There are a handful of bacterial diseases and bacterial canker, bacterial spot, and then one that frequently pops up, peach leaf curl. The peach leaf curl you can treat very easily, but it's something that you have to do with a very mild copper dormant spray. So copper is phytotoxic on the green tissue, but it will take care of peach leaf curl. If you generally we would spray it after the leaves drop in late fall, and then sometimes, but not always, but sometimes again, when you just start to see the very first little tip of green leaf, the leaves are starting to push out in the spring. But don't wait, because the copper will be phytotoxic on that green tissue. And also, it doesn't take a very mild copper treatment. That will also help with the bacterial canker. And then as far as insect pests with peaches, usually, like I say, I have not had much of a problem with insect pests. An organic spray, Pygenic would probably deal with, for most of your needs in that regard. The university entomologists don't necessarily like to push the all-purpose fruit sprays, but those, if you follow the label, and in any use of pesticide, you would want to follow the label. But that can be effective, and usually you can get away with one or two sprays. And I guess the second part of your question, I didn't hear
apple
something
maggot,
about
the fungicides or
the for apples.
What do you think works the best?
Yeah, well, for apple maggot, for a home orchard, I would just do the apple maggot trap, which are those red balls, which are real easy to do, and they're obviously you can hang them up in the tree, and that. Even if you had 10, 15, 20 trees, hang one of those traps in each tree, and that will probably take care of your apple maggot problem.
Al, thanks again. Nettie in Fond du Lac will go to you. Hi, Nettie. Thank you for calling.
Hey. I'm wondering if you know about anybody who can help any services learning how to graft very old apple trees onto some new stock. I have a very, very, very old apple, and I really want to not have it lost.
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't know of a service, but it isn't really that complicated of a process. So what you would want to do, and I can give you the summary of what you would do right now, but I would also welcome you to just email me or give me a call sometime, and I can answer any of the, you know, in more detail if you'd like. But really, you there's many different types of rootstock. If you want a big tree, you would get seedling rootstock from, oh, there's a variety of different sources of that. And in the spring, very early in the spring, say, late March, you would take a cutting of a shoot that grew the previous summer. And then you're looking for, say, a pencil thickness diameter of shoot. And you take that cutting and take a really sharp knife, and you can see, it's kind of hard to describe on the radio, but you can see the whip and tongue graft is the one that's frequently used, and you could look that up, you know, very easily, and you can see a diagram of how that graft works. And then you just take some grafting tape, wrap it up nice and tight, let the rootstock and its shoot with a couple of new buds on the shoot rest for a week or two. And then as soon as the soil becomes, you know, nicely workable, just in the way that you would plant any tomato or whatever, you plant that rootstock and grafted scion, and it will send out a new shoot from that bud, and then you just grow that like you would anything else that you would grow, and then transplant it to wherever wherever you want it. And again, I'd be happy to, you know, answer any questions you would have. So yeah, feel free to email me or give me a call.
And you're online at Morin Orchard and Nursery.
Yeah, yeah, that's
plug
right.
That into the web, into a search engine. It's going to pop right up.
Yeah, yeah.
And you do custom grafting.
Yeah, it's something I'm working on. I haven't really done it that long, and it's but I'm happy to do it. And basically, people just it's kind of the best way to have the nursery stock that one is interested in growing. Otherwise, the nursery is kind of guessing what people will buy, and if it's custom ordered, the customer will get the size tree that they're interested in growing and the specific variety. And it takes longer because the nursery, the growing process, it takes 3 years really, mm-hmm. from the time that you get the order to grafting or budding. Budding is a type of grafting, and then growing the tree out for ideally 2 years, mm-hmm. for a nice large stock.
So you're gonna person's gonna get a pretty good,
they'll get a good tree, they'll get a better tree, and they'll get more precisely what they're interested in if they custom order.
There we go. Brian in Appleton has something I think relating to grafting. Hi, Brian.
Hi. For the woman that was asking about the grafting, I just did there's a heirloom apple place that specializes in the scion wood up in Green Bay, and I bought some from them last spring, and it was a lot easier than I thought it was going to be. And I had five of the six grafts all took. One even had flowers on it. And if the woman looks up heirloom apple orchards, there's another one down by New Berlin in Milwaukee area. They actually hold a grafting class twice a year. And there's also a lot of videos on YouTube that she could watch too if she's got access to that.
Right. Yeah, if I can add to that, yeah, thanks for that. Weston Orchard, Weston Antique Apples, W-E-S-T-O-N, are longtime members of the Dane County Farmers Market, and they have grafting classes. So yeah, Weston's would be a good resource for that.
Brian, thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it. Henry Morin, president of the Dane County Farmers Market. He's also a vendor. His business is Morin Orchard and Nursery. And talking about the market, but also talking about the cookbook that's out, the Dane County Farmers Market Cookbook, Local Foods, Global Flavors. Therese Allen is listed as the author of that. And Henry will be with us right up until 12:30. I'm Larry Mueller for the Ideas Network. Thanks for joining us today on the Ideas Network for Garden Talk. Larry Mueller here. We're talking with Henry Morin, who is president of the board of the Dane County Farmers Market. He's also a vendor there. And we're talking about the market's new cookbook, also talking about growing fruits and vegetables. And we'd love to hear from you. What would you like to buy at the farmers market? Do you enjoy talking to the growers? Questions you might have about your favorite fruit or vegetable plants. Give us a call. The number's 800-642-1234, or you could send us an email to ideas@wpr.org. Stuart emailed to ask if the recipes in the cookbook called for common spices and pantry items, or is it like America's Test Kitchen recipes where you have to go to the grocery store every time you want to cook or bake something new?
I would say generally no. To me, it looks like the ingredients, first of all, by the lion's share, you can get at the market. And then for those additional things, I think they're mostly things that you're going to have in your pantry. They're generally pretty simple recipes, I think. And so I don't think it should be a problem. Having what you need.
Therese may have mentioned in the front part of the book that her experience has taught her that the simple recipes are often the best ones, and yeah. So they've tried to make these recipes something that any of us can do.
Yeah, and I think that's also a really people have realized when they shop at the farmers market that the flavors of the fruits and vegetables, the produce itself is so vibrant that you don't need to do a lot to manipulate the flavors in the recipe because the produce itself is so great.
Makes good sense. David emailed to ask if you have a disease resistant tannic cider apple suggestion. What does he mean by tannic cider apples?
Sure. Well, so he's probably a hard cider maker, and one of the key features of the varieties that make a superior cider, one of the key features is that the apple has a lot of tannins. It gives the cider a lot more body, and it the astringency kind of sticks to your mouth. So yeah, it makes the cider just feel fuller and more and richer. I would say some of my favorite are Balmer's Norman, which is a real early, or at least quite, in Wisconsin, it seems like it's a very early, really productive tannic cider variety. Fox Whelp is a really good one. Nehu, N-E-H-O-U, is a really fine variety. It's also as late a blooming a variety as you can find, so it almost always would escape a spring frost, and it's always super productive. And the apple itself doesn't have a lot of character, other than that it is both sweet and very tannic. And Court Royal, just like you would pronounce it, Court Royal, is a real sweet and also very tannic variety. And those would be the ones I would suggest.
Mike in Verona has a question for you. Mike, hi, thank you for calling. What's on your mind?
Yeah, I bought a Concord seedless grape this spring, and I'm wondering if there's anything I should do with it in the winter. I've got a pergola I wanted to climb up.
I would just let it grow for the first few years. Just choose the most vigorous leader or like section of the grape as it's growing. You know, grow that up to the point where where you want like a single trunk, grow that up to where you want it to start branching. And then where you want it to start branching, just make a cut and it'll send out shoots immediately below that cut. And basically just train those shoots across the structure of the pergola. And then that will get you to the point where it fills out the space. And then from year to year, what you want to cut out are the sections of vine that fruited, and then leave those sections of the vine that grew the previous or that year. So the vine will fruit on the previous year's cane growth. So the younger length, kind of a pencil thick or a little bit thicker than a pencil, that's going to be your best cane to leave from year to year. And then basically just cut out the stuff that fruited, from the year before.
And that's a question that we get so often from folks. Mike, thanks a lot for calling. Was this pruning grapes? Is the question we typically get is, I'm not getting any grapes, or I'm getting very few grapes. Why am I not getting...
Well, I'd say the number one reason why people don't get grapes at all is, first the pruning, but frequently it's the grape flea beetle will do its damage before the season even seems to have begun. So if you look carefully as the cane sends out its... as the buds swell from the overwintered buds, the grape flea beetle loves to eat those little buds, and each node will have three sections to it. There's a primary bud, a secondary bud, and a tertiary bud. The primary and secondary ones will be fruitful. The third one will send out green growth, but it won't have any fruit. So the grape flea beetles will eat those first two because those come out first, and then frequently people are left with that vegetative growth, and the vine will grow like crazy because there's no fruit on it, but it won't have any fruit. So very early in the spring, when you just see those little buds coming out, keep your eye out for the grape flea beetles. They look just like a little flea beetle. You know, they're little black beetles. They're pretty easy to see, but you have to do something to control those. I would say 9 times out of 10, that's the problem when people get a nice big vine with no fruit.
Mike, thanks again. Appreciate the call. Megan in Black Creek emailed to ask what resources are available for somebody who wants to start selling their produce, their flowers, and or eggs at a farmer's market. What about if they want to put up a farm stand to the front of their house? What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I guess I don't really see any problem with that. It's hard for me to speak about, whether that would, if there would be a problem with zoning or what have you, but there's nothing really preventing you from doing that.
There's a website you could go to, which is the Wisconsin Farmers Market website. Mm-hmm. It's wifarmersmarkets.org.
Yeah, I'm sure that they could answer, or even the Wisconsin Extension will be able to send you in the right direction to, you know, answer that question specific to where you're, where you're calling from, and then whatever, you know, if you have a farmer's market that you have your eye on, you know, just give them a call or visit the market when it's in season and talk to the market manager, and the market manager will be able to set you up, as best they can.
Glenn in Middleton, we'll go to you next. Hi, Glenn. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I just want to put in a plug for a workshop that's going to be held at the UW-Madison's Kemp Natural Resources Station in February. It's called Apple Tree Care in the Northwoods.
Yeah, that sounds great.
Well, I am a tree guy. Larry knows me.
Yeah.
As a forest pathologist, this Kemp Natural Resources Station usually does more forest management and nature-related programs, but this particular one is on, let me check here, February 3rd, 9 a.m. to 2 p.m. Rebecca Weeps, I think it's mm-hmm. pronounced, is yeah. superintendent of our Peninsular Ag Research Station, so she's a real fruit expert. She's conducting this. It includes lunch. There will be an apple pruning demonstration. Talk about establishment and training, all oriented toward the Northwoods. So registration is required, and there's a minimal fee. I think it's $20.
Oh, wow. That's a deal.
But you'll need to Google Kemp NRS for Natural Resources Station. If you just Google Kemp NRS, and then when you find the Kemp webpage, go to outreach, and there will be a list of outreach presentations. Again, lots of interesting outreach presentations related to natural resources there, but this one related to apples.
Glenn, thank you very much.
Yeah, that sounds
perfect.
Really wonderful.
Yeah, it sounds great. Thank you so much. So that was Kemp NRS. Google that, and you're going to get the information on it. Gary in Milwaukee will give you a chance now. Hi, Gary.
Well, hello. See, I've heard some comments about Concord grapes this morning, but I'm wondering about a variety of purple wine grapes, especially considering both the climate that we have in southern Wisconsin, and also, as I understand it, grapes grow best in poor soil. Well, we have, rich, organic clay soil down here. And I'm just, at least where I live in Milwaukee, and I'm just wondering what you'd recommend for a good purple wine grape that would grow on our soil, in our area.
Yeah. Well, I think it's, so when people talk about the poor soil, that grapes do better in poor soil, it's a little misleading because
More to do with drainage?
Yeah, I mean, drainage is important. And yeah, I mean, if you were looking at putting in a large scale vineyard that, you know, was going to be growing grapes for a fine wine, there is something to be said for soil that that makes the vine, yeah, you know, the cliche, makes the vine suffer, where it has to really send its roots very deep in order to bring up the nutrients it needs. But if you're growing some grapes, you know, some grapes for your, you know, making wine yourself, a better soil is going to, you're going to get, I don't know, like you're going to get just grapes that are just fine. And many of the like classic, most, if not all of the classic wine grapes that have vinifera genetics are not sufficiently hardy at all in Wisconsin. And so the wine grapes, the red wine grapes that you're looking at, have either Labrusca or Riparia genetics. And a good one would be Marquette is a good variety that seems to do well in Wisconsin. I used to help a vineyard owner, Dave Mitchell, who owns Mitchell Vineyards in Oregon, Wisconsin, and he grows a wide variety of wine grapes for Wisconsin, and he would also be a really good resource in deciding which red wine grapes do best for what your intentions are. So yeah, I wouldn't hesitate. And he's a very knowledgeable person about wine grapes in Wisconsin.
Gary, there you go. Thank you so much. Grant emailed. He seemed to notice that since COVID, some vendors are don't seem to be selling anymore, and it seems there are some spaces at the market. Is there a plan in place so that if a vendor doesn't show, their space can be filled with others on any market day?
Well, doesn't really work like that. You have to be a member. You have to be a member of the Dane County Farmers Market to sell at the market. Grant, if you're interested in becoming a member, I would just contact the Dane County Farmers Market, the market manager, Jamie Bugel, and she could guide you to what your next steps are. There were a number of people that either retired or we had quite a few retirees in the last couple of years, and but we have about 20 new vendors coming on this next year. And so those empty spots, I think, are going to be filled. But if it is something you're interested in, I would just get on the waiting list. It's really, the waiting list is not as lengthy now as what it used to be. So,
yeah. So there you go. Thanks so much for that question. I want to go back to the Dane County Farmers Market cookbook for a minute, because we haven't talked a lot. We talked about a couple of your recipes, but I'm telling you, we have a couple more recipes up on our Larry Mueller Show page. I think one is Indigenous Salad, and it looked really good to me, so I thought, yeah, okay, yeah, put that one in. And another that we have up is Crispy Kale and Roast Squash.
Yeah, both of those would be great. Yeah.
And I just opened the book. Well, the first time I opened up the book, I opened it right up to cowboy beans, and I thought, oh, I like that. It's got, and there's a little, you can have it with meat or not. And the cowboy beans, I thought, okay, there's one that I'm going to have.
Yeah, I think you can open the book to almost any page. And what struck me when I was like just paging through the cookbook is that any of the, they're within your power to make. they're generally simple recipes that rely on the vibrancy and freshness of the ingredients. There's a lot of great recipes in the book.
And I love all of the color photographs.
It's a really wonderfully, it'd make a beautiful gift. It's a beautiful book, really easy to use, and also just, very informative about the market itself, the vendors, and just...
A little story with every recipe.
It really brings together and highlights just how the market is an essential part of our community here in Madison, but also just the state in general, because there's people that come from all over every week. 20,000 people every week.
Is that what it is? 20,000?
20,000 people show up week to week on the square.
And somebody wanted to know as well, I forgot to mention, why do they always go around the same way? The whole crowd.
I think it just makes it easier. You're not going to miss. There's really no bad spot on the square for the vendors if everyone is walking around in the same direction. I know it's a little, sometimes it seems a little, I don't know, like why, but it's fun. It's fun, and it's a great place to come every Saturday. It's going to be the most enjoyable, entertaining, educational way to purchase something that you use every single day, food. It's just a great place to
talk to the people who grew it.
And you talk to the people who grew it.
And they're always, I haven't found a grouch in the bunch.
There's no grouches. They just don't exist.
Henry, it's been a great pleasure, and I hope a lot of copies of the Dane County Farmers Market Cookbook get sold. This is a great time. What a gift. Wonderful holiday gift. Any of your local bookstores will have it, or go to the Dane County Farmers Market cookbook at our website, and you're going to be able to order one or just pick one up at the Dane County Farmers Market.
For sure, yes.
Thanks, Henry Morin, our guest today. His business is Morin Orchard and Nursery. And thank you for listening. And please stay with us. Lots in store on the Ideas Network. I'm Larry Mueller.